Hey, it's Talk Gnosis. it's a podcast from Gnosticism and Esotericism. It's also a YouTube show. It's also about Gnosticism and whatever else we feel like talking about that's connected to Gnosticism. Hey, we've got Sky Marinda. Hey, Sky, how's it going?
Hey,
Hey, Sky, who are you? Sum it up in a sentence.
A tarot reader, witch, and heretic.
Yeah, there we go. That was really good.
Nice.
Before we talk to this multidimensional being known as Sky Marinda, this divine spark trapped in a human body who is sharing her gnosis with us tonight about tarot, Gnosticism, and whatever direction we go in, and about her important work, first comes the commercial for our Patreon. Patreon.com/Gnostic. You get so many great things for signing up, like the show early, if I remember to record it early and send it out. Look, we don't really give you anything, but you for as little as, I know this is not a good pitch if this is the first time you're listening or watching the show, but we don't want to lock up anything behind a paywall because it makes us feel icky, but we need money to do the show, so we're in a bit of a bind, bit of a paradox here. So for as little as $1 per piece of media per month, we usually charge for 5 or 6 pieces of media. We try to make more than that. You can keep the show going. You can also donate more. You can also put a cap on that if you're scared we're going to make 1 million pieces of media. You can also do one-time donations by going over to paypal.com/Gnostic. Yeah, we do give the show early. I'm going to start doing more contests for the Patreon. I'm going to start sending the review books that people send us. Obviously, I'm going to read them first, but be careful not to bend the spine. I'm going to give those out to people. And if you have some idea about what we can do for you, like if you want Jason and I to go over and shovel your driveway, if you want me to text you, if you ever want to talk on the phone late at night, just let us know what we can do for you for your money, and we'll do it within reason. Okay. You can also help us out by telling people about the show, sharing it on social media. All jokes aside, unfortunately, the hellish archons who love that hate us and rule our lives, which are the algorithms, do really push up if you're liking, subscribing, reviewing. So do that. Also tell people about the show. Just take an episode, send it to a pal, all that good stuff. Okay, it's over. We're doing it. Sky, how did you discover Gnosticism?
It was kind of serendipitous, probably like for most people. Let's see. So I had a dream about a pink full moon, and I was like, what's this about? So I looked it up, and someone said it was about Mary Magdalene. And I don't know if this is like real or like has historical precedence, but I'm okay with it now because I looked up the Gospel of Mary. And I know now it's not technically Gnostic, or people kind of debate it, but I like that it has the word Gnostic in it when you search it, because that's what made me be like, okay, let's see what else is out there about Gnosticism.
Yeah, very cool. I don't know about that connection. I'm going to look it up afterwards. And actually, my opinion is that the Gospel of Mary, as well as the Gospel of Thomas, are both Gnostic, but that's for another show. So there you go. We'll rephrase it. Mary Magdalene reached down to pull you into Gnosticism. Sophia herself manifesting as a pink moon. You're also interested in other things. So, as many of us are, but you know, esoterica, so witchcraft, tarot, coaching. How do you combine an interest in this specific heresy with these other heresies?
Yeah, I think it's just like an addition. Like they don't compete for me at all. It's just like adding more mythology and adding more modalities and more practices. So I think they go together really well. I did have that crisis for a while where I was like, well, is this all going to fit? What do I call myself? Where do I belong? But it's just like, you can just be a bunch of different things. It's okay.
Yeah. I think we definitely agree. What do you think, Jason? He's muted. Wait.
Oh, dang. The Archons were fighting me there. I think it's that mixing process and that discovery process is like the best way.
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, there's lots of intersections. There's sort of a hidden history of Nazism, which we'll go into someday on the show, which is sort of what the, which is there's this idea with our ancestors in the 1800s and the early 20th century that now doesn't seem very scholarly, that, you know, Nazism is a secret river that really feeds all the occult traditions. And that's not quite true, but I've recently become aware of or embrace some arguments and really does see a lot of connections between the ancient Gnostics and the sort of modern esotericism, cool stuff like tarot, cool stuff like witchcraft, cool stuff like other esoteric bodies of thought. And of course, the Gnostics of the 1900s, the Gnostics of the 1800s, you know, the 18th and 19th century, then early 20th century, were part of what was called the occult revival. So they were very much into stuff like tarot and the precursors to modern witchcraft and all this neat stuff. So there is already some organic crossover there. But put a pin in that for a future show. We're not talking to me. We're talking to you, Sky. Sky. You write about religious trauma. You work with people with religious trauma. I'm going to speak for Jason because I think he agrees with me. I said we in our question sheet. But we feel that Gnosticism, the Gnostic mythology, is particularly powerful when it comes to working through issues that people may have from their own lives and culture, society, their families, dealing with, number one, Christianity. I would say religion in general, because obviously the Gnostic mythology, the majority that we have remaining is a specific spin and inversion of Christianity. But I would argue that many forms of religion can be interrogated through a Gnostic lens, and it's also a way to come back to religion and work out religious trauma. That's what we think. Sky, what do you think?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I grew up in a normal, like, mainline church, and over the pandemic I started digging into it, and I was like, oh no, the one I grew up in is pretty, like, different. It's pretty fundamentalist. And I was like, that's wild. I thought my experience was pretty normal. And so, like, when people would say the word, like, God or Jesus to me, it was like flames out of my ears. Like, I was so angry. Mostly because the one I grew up in, like, women weren't allowed to talk at all, really. Like, you could heat up food afterwards or watch kids mm-hmm. in the nursery, and that was it. Like, you couldn't do any sort of, like, leadership or assisting. So, like, especially, I'm probably going to talk about the Gospel of Mary a lot, because it is, like, so, like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, they didn't listen to her either. Like, this is perfect. and it got me to a point where I could, like, hear the word God and not immediately be like, the whole thing is terrible.
Yeah. You know, I actually really like, and for a while now, basically since it's been translated and circulating in the 70s, a lot of people outside of Gnosticism or outside of even the Christian world have really embraced the Gospel of Mary, because you have those great sequences, which is basically, you know, Mary speaking and teaching and the apostles and Peter being like, well, shut up, you're a woman, right? where she actually knows more than them. Jesus has entrusted her with special teachings that those dummy men around her, whose little boy pea brains wouldn't have been able to process, right? There's a reason why Jesus gave them to her. So it's really a remarkable text for that. And of course, there's just great sequences where it's like they ask her about sin, right? And there is no sin. So it's I have found, you know, kind of people in goddess movements, people in the more new age communities, what have you, have also been very moved by this powerful text. But and, you know, I grew up in a very nice, gentle mainline Christian church, a very progressive one, which I still really love. I've mentioned this on the show before, but it just wasn't right for me. And I have my own issues, you know, working through with Christianity, and I have nothing to complain about. So I can't imagine someone with a background, which is, of course, many of us in the West, who have actually belonged to a community that may not have been very healthy. So
I think to maybe, like, add into your rant there, too, I think, like, that's often what's made Gnosticism exciting, is because it's a way to reapproach some of these images and mythologies without without having to accept absolutely everything that came from your background. Yeah. And you, in a way, you can kind of find the piece that fits best for you and embrace that. And also, I mean, frankly, just the fun of being a heretic, you know what I mean? Like the, it's like the tapping into that, like that punk aesthetic, you know?
Yes.
Like we're like, you were like scripture punk. yeah, so sorry, what were you going to say there, Jonathan?
I was just going to say, and you famously like aren't wild about the Jesus stuff, right? So.
Well, and it's not even that I'm not like, I don't want to overplay it. It's like, I'm not, it just doesn't jazz me. You know what I mean? Mm. Especially a lot of the mainline representations of it. I just don't, doesn't excite me. Doesn't get me interested. And actually I want to keep on Sky here. I don't want to go too much on my own path.
Yes.
This show. But I think one thing that I've been finding interesting is I've been trying to engage more with what I find interesting about Gnosticism is that Gnosticism is almost defined by mysteries. Whereas a lot of the mysteries, they definitely exist in mainline Christianity, but they're not sort of front and center as the main thing that you're supposed to think about, you know? That's debatable, but I'm sure there's people wincing right now who are watching or listening to this. But to connect to tarot, I think part of what I find so fascinating about tarot is that it's, again, defined by, it presents you with a mystery, you know, that you're like, the part of the process is like decoding. So I think maybe that's kind of my way to try to ask about your own, Sky, your own connection to how tarot and Gnosticism might meld for you.
Yeah, well, when you look at the major arcana, right, where it's like the Fool and there's all sorts of, like the Lovers, the Chariot, and it goes all the way through 21 cards to the World at the end, and it's known as the Fool's Journey. I mean, that fits really well within Gnosticism because you're looking at it as like your soul development or like your personal development towards the World card, which is, I mean, I really associate the World card with Sophia. You're going through all these trials to get back there. I think that answers the question.
I think it does. And again, there's a bit of a push and pull between, are we reading into this? Is this stuff here? And does it matter? But I think anybody who knows any idea about Sophia embodies personalized wisdom as the soul of the world, right? Which is an idea not just found in Gnosticism that medieval philosophers were talking about, even if they're not talking about Sophia in the specific Gnostic mythology, right? So if you're thinking about this figure sort of floating around medieval Europe, appearing in other works as the soul of the world, well, you know, this is obviously the World card, right? And she is surrounded by the four elements. maybe you could, you know, like, and she is... just like she's in us as our soul, she is has that element of being the world. The Gnostic read in there is not, I would say, strictly a read in. we are dealing with a figure that other people in the medieval world that the tarot came out of would have recognized as Sophia. Maybe not quite the Gnostic Sophia, but kind of Platonic, mystical ruminations. I really think you're spot on there, Sky. And of course, I'm always open for the possibility that the tarot is a secret underground Gnostic encodement of the hero's journey. You know, I don't know if that's literally true or if there was secret underground Gnostics putting that together to keep the wisdom alive, which we've had some guests hypothesize, but at the same time, it is a mystical guide to Western magic, to Western speculation. There's always going to be a little taste of Gnosticism in there. So go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, sorry, I just wanted to kind of, so on one hand, we've talked about like the possibility for tarot to encompass Gnosticism. But I also want to kind of go the other way. Like there's the, like sometimes the complaint say about say astrology is that according to some Gnostic worldviews, astrology is information coming from the world you're trying to escape or the world you're trying to, you know, not be held down by. Is that a useful or interesting critique into tarot and Gnosticism? Like, is there, you know, is the, is tarot like a way that that wisdom cracks in through, or is tarot a like telling you the way the world is currently oppressing you, or is it both? Can it be both?
Yeah, I think of tarot, especially maybe the minor arcana, where it's like the Three of Swords, like heartbreak or like betrayal, like those more like things that are happening in your life. Those to me, I think of as like your personal archons, and you kind of have to work through them. So it's not so much about like, well, the way I do it, it's not so much about like predicting things or getting information in that way. It's more like knowing yourself and being like, oh yeah, I'm kind of like lying to people again. I should probably not do that.
That's interesting. Personal archons. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Well, I think personalizing it like this is the best way to make it practical and useful, right? The mythology can only take you so far if you see it as exterior mythology, which, you know, the Gnostics write a lot that as above, so below. This is a reflection of what's going on inside of you as well. And whether that is symbolic, literal, a mix of both, if you do not bring it back to what's going on with you, then it's not going to quote unquote work. It's not going to, you're not going to be able to get anything out of it, or whatever you're trying to get out of it. Yeah, but I really do like this. And, you know, we've talked about tarot a fair amount on the show, but not as much as I'd like in some ways. But Sky, do you see it as being quote unquote magic? And like, or like, I know you just said this, but if you could kind of draw it out, or is it just a tool for self-discovery? Or is it something in between? Like how do you quote unquote, how do you think tarot works? How do you use it with your clients? Lay it on.
Yeah, I mean, I think I used to be a little bit or more like, oh, let's not use it for predicting. And now I'm kind of more open to it. Like, yeah, sometimes that could be really nice to predict things and feel like we know what's going to happen. But I do think it's more helpful to be like, okay, this is where I'm at. So like, what can I do to get to where I actually want to go? And I use it a lot with intentions, because you're like looking at the cards and you're getting like archetypes and ideas about what you're doing and what you could be doing. So I kind of like mix all that up into an intention. Yes.
Yeah. Just give me one moment here. Okay. For those watching at home, you'll notice that Jason is gone. His cash is tearing up his apartment. I don't know if he's... For those watching at home and not listening, Sky has her Christmas tree behind her. I don't know what Jason's going to do when he gets his with his cat chaos. So he will beam back in from the Pleroma. But in the meantime, let's talk a bit about your coaching work. So... Excuse me. I actually just got back. The part of my income is from meditation coaching. And something I talk a lot about in mindfulness and meditation is self-compassion. I was wondering if that's part of your work, if that's a topic that comes up with coaching. And if you think that self-compassion is especially needed in these very bizarre Gnostic times that we live in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, compassion and self-compassion to me are like two sides of the same coin. And they're both super important because they go out the window so fast. Like, it's like I should be doing more, I'm not doing well, like all those feelings. And I get a lot of people who just kind of need some reassurance that they're on the right track or they're doing a good job. And I don't know, maybe it's like our culture, social media, all of that, where it's like we're not getting that kind of message where it's like, hey, you're doing a good job.
Yeah, exactly. And with the self-compassion stuff, and you know, this is something that I really ponder and think about, is we live in very also, I would say, times where we are forced to be an individual, very individualistic times. And so how do we stop self-love and self-compassion from becoming self-centered and narcissistic?
Yeah, definitely can. I think it's that balance of, it's also like the great symbiotic relationship that self-compassion and compassion have. Like they go back and forth. Like if you're being more compassionate to other people, you tend to be more compassionate towards yourself. like a weird example of this is like I used to not like have a great relationship with my dad, and when I was able to like have compassion for him as a person and be like, okay, like I think some things he did weren't great, but like I can appreciate just that he's another human being going through stuff. I stopped like hating my jawline. I was very surprising to me. I used to be like, oh, my jaw looks like his jawline, and I hate that I don't have a nice chiseled jawline. And this is something that like every time I looked in the mirror, it bothered me. And then like after I was able to like have compassion for him, it's like I didn't care anymore. And so it's kind of like this cool thing of like if you're extending it and having compassion for yourself, it like goes back and forth. It's like a back and forth relationship.
Yeah, I that's been my experience as well, and it's almost startling, and both with myself and with some of my coaching. I mean, I know you're the guest. I'm not talking about me, but I'm trying to bring this in to agree with you that experientially that I have encountered this, that paradoxically our self-compassion becomes less narcissistic when we realize that when we are compassionate with ourselves, it allows us to access the other, the big other, other people. Would you agree with that summation? I don't necessarily want to take your words and twist them if that's not a point that you were trying to make.
No, I think I agree with
that. Yeah, it's... Yeah, yeah, no, it really is. And, you know, I think sometimes we do need specific practices, meditation practices. And, you know, some of that, we always want to talk about all this deep mysticism and awesome esoteric witchy things that you could do under moonlight. But, you know, there's a reason why Jesus tells us to pray for our enemies. And doing the sort of spiritual practice when we're thinking about others, projecting love and compassion to the others, you know, for those who are doing stuff like metta and loving kindness meditation, it is very soothing for the self. Letting go of our hate and anger and thinking about others and praying for others is very soothing, and then changes our relationship to others. So yeah, it's it sounds like a paradox, but yeah. We come home to ourselves, we show ourselves self-compassion, and then we, when we orient the other in our thoughts and in our heart, we feel compassion both for them and us.
You go ahead, Sky.
I was going to say, you can do it in like a sassy way too, like you don't have to be like pure and like great about it. Like when people aren't wearing masks around me, it makes me so angry, and like I'll just feel like, Mary, help me have compassion for this person because, like, I don't want to smack them in the face right now. It's like my common prayer.
That is a good one. I'm gonna borrow that. That is gonna be my new spiritual practice. Mary, give me patience so I don't smack them in the face.
That's great.
Yeah, there's the whole gospel summed up into one simple prayer. Jason, what were you gonna say?
Well, I also just want to echo. I think the notion of radical compassion for people that you might otherwise have a like that actually bring out anger is like one of the hardest things to do, you know. It's I think and to connect to this idea of compassion and empathy and to also tarot, to kind of bring that back in too, is that so Sky, have you ever had an experience reading for somebody where that reading feels like it's kind of for you too, like where you're getting kind of a mutual, like, you know, as you're kind of explaining it to somebody, you're like, oh, that's just a good point, like
oh yeah, all the time. Or I'll just feel like, oh yeah, I totally relate to this, like I have been doing this lately. I'm trying to give a specific example, but yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I should stop being so hard on myself. Also you too, let's both do that.
yeah exactly.
I was just going to add to that, Jason, which is to say that any good coach, and you know, I'm not an expert and I don't have that much experience, and I don't want to make this narcissistic or self-centered, because if you're getting paid to help people, you're there for them. But I think if you're ever playing a role like this, if you're not also learning, then you're doing something wrong, you know? And this is because I find whenever I do stuff, Gnostic stuff as a deacon, And Jason's quite familiar with sort of the model in our community of, which is not we're gurus, it's a model of spiritual friendship. So I learned so much from others whenever we do parish activities here in Montreal. And I learned so much from others whenever I'm running meditation courses. And I feel like, of course, I don't want to be there to, you know, demand something from the other, expect something from the other, get something from the other. But I feel like if I'm not open to learning, open from growing from the process, then I'm doing something wrong. Does that sound right?
Yeah, well, it's like, it's just also acknowledging that you don't have, or we don't have all the answers to. It's like, I'm not like perfect, like, oh yes, everyone see what I'm doing, because I know, like, it's like, oh yeah, like, I'm totally like doing the same thing as you, like, cool, let's both be working on this.
And probably beware any coach or guru who betrays no weakness, if that makes sense. Because that's probably the person who's just chock full of archons.
I have an image now, just like a mouth opening and like archons flying out.
Oh my God. that's kind of like, that's badass.
Yeah. Like artists at home, right? Sketch it out and leave it in the comments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That almost feels like a Neil Gaiman image, if that makes sense. Something out of the Sandman comics or something. Sorry, I was moving into a question there, but then I forgot what it was with that great, great image. Something about tarot.
Was it something about tarot or Gnosticism?
Well, yes. Tarot specifically, actually. Okay. In this case, well, so yeah, like I think we've gone in a few like general directions, but I think on even a practical level, in terms of just you as a tarot professional, as a tarot expert, what's your tarot practice like? Is it a daily thing? Is it a card a day, that kind of thing?
No, not at all. I think I'm like most people, where when I'm trying to make a decision or when like something is not going well, I like go for it. So yeah, it'd probably be good to do daily, but I don't even recommend daily pulls to other people, because like I'm like, yeah, I only do it when I need it.
Okay.
Yeah. Sky, you mentioned the world card, but do you see some other kind of Gnostic archetypes, figures from Gnostic mythology embedded in the tarot cards, be they there originally or be they a read-in?
Yeah, I love to speculate on which, like, what cards could be what. I mean, I talked about, like, the personal archons of the minors, but there's also, like, the personal aeons, I would say, you know, like the Ten of Cups, where there's, like, a rainbow and everyone's, like, happy. Like, there can be positive things in there, too. And I think it's fun to speculate on what the demiurge could be, right? Because that's, like, a favorite character in the mythology. And I was like, it's almost too obvious, right, to be like, oh, it's the devil card, like, it's gotta be more interesting than that. But I think it's actually good. I think the devil card fits, because the way I see the devil card is that it's us getting in our own way. It's like that little like self-sabotaging thing we all do. And that's kind of how I see the demiurge, right? Because as much as Sophia is a part of us, the demiurge is a part of us. And it's just kind of like acknowledging that.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And unfortunately, you know, I shouldn't say unfortunately, but I 100% agree with you, right? I'd like to have a more interesting take. If someone's like, oh, you know, because I'm sure if we hand a tarot deck over it to anyone, it'd be like, who's the demiurge in this collection of figures? Yeah, I think 99.9% of people would say the devil card, but they'd be right. You know, so sometimes the fancy, elaborate, clever answers aren't always the most correct. Sky, what do you think many people misunderstand or quote unquote get wrong about tarot?
I think they just misunderstand or go into it thinking that the best part of it will be predicting things, and they just miss the cool part of it that can be like the alchemical, looking at yourself, self-reflection, self-growth part of it, versus like, does this person like me or not? I get that question a lot, which I love it. It's very sweet. I'm always just like, well, why don't you go ask them out or ask them if they like you? That's the only surefire way to know. So we can like look at tarot and be like, okay, like what will help? What do you have to work through to like get the courage to like ask them out?
Right. And of course, you know, that's advice I'd probably give someone even without a deck of tarot cards, right? Which just go ask them. But maybe it does, again, for this creative push and pull. Is it real? Is it not real? What is real? Like maybe some people do need that tarot deck in front of them to have that courage, right? To have you guide them, even though, you know, that's probably good advice. But do the tarot cards, you feel like the tarot cards tell you to go like, tell the person just to say, hey, do you like me or do you want to go out? Have you ever gotten a reading where it's like, oh, the cards definitely say they like you?
Sometimes I will be like, okay, like honestly, a lot of these cards are really good. So like, I'm just going to put that out there. But I don't like to label them good or bad, but some, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, so sometimes it's like, okay, like, you should also just ask them out, but it's looking a little good, so.
Sky, you're, so Jason's 56, I'm 48. We're,
What?
we look good for our age, but you're a hip happening Zoomer. So I'm
no.
Are you a hip happening millennial? Oh, you're a hip happening millennial. So, what, particularly for maybe young people online, for those exploring, do you have any advice for exploring Gnosticism if people are curious about the Gnostic traditions, about Gnosticism, anything that you would tell them?
Well, I would tell them to listen to the show, but
thank you.
It's true. But yeah, I think also just listening to I listen to them because I don't read physical books because neck issues, but you know, listening to the different translations of the Gospels, just because it's also really fascinating, even if you decide you're not into it. What else? I think that's it.
I think that's great advice, and I think that's awesome. And, you know, there's something powerful about listening to the Gnostic Gospels be read out loud, and the Willis Barnstone translation of the Gnostic Bible is available as an audiobook. And actually, the different translations is also very important. You know, not to give people homework, but hey, it's fun, right? Especially if you're listening to them, because wow, there's some real differences. And you know, the scriptures weren't translated to the 70s, and then they were pretty clunky, those first, you know, this is new stuff in some ways. The 70s wasn't that long ago, you know. Jason and I were young men then. And so they were very scholarly translations that still are important because you are getting some of the best scholars in the world. But sometimes the language is quite clunky, right? It doesn't sing. And then you have the more poetic translations, but maybe they miss some of the subtleties, or maybe they lean too much into the poetry over maybe the best, most authentic term that may get across what's going on. So I think that's really, really good advice. But I never really thought about that, you know, outside of neck issues or whatever, right? Like so many people involved specifically with Gnostic groups are just read. What have you read? What are you reading? This is what I'm reading. You should read this. But these texts were originally recited out loud. So I think there is a power both listening to them, and we talked about the show before, talking about another amazing Gnostic divine text, Thunder Perfect Mind. You know, go, you know, tear off your clothes, go up on a hill under a full moon and shout that one out, right? It's think, very powerful when you do it out loud.
I think Ridley Scott's daughter made a short film for Prada or for like a fragrance or something like that. She made a short film, and like you can find it on YouTube, and it's something I often hand to people to show them Gnosticism or to show them what Gnosticism can be, without getting them to have to read very much or even watch very much, because it's like 5 minutes. But yeah, like it encompasses a lot of the mysteries, and then makes somebody maybe interested to dig a little deeper on the mysteries.
Yeah. It also made me think of like maybe just more broad, like Christian mysticism has been really cool to study and incorporate, because I like, Protestant, I don't know any of the saints. Like, I'm still trying to, I'm like, okay, what's Advent? Like, I don't know what's going on. So
You and me
like I
both.
so I got a rosary, and I use it more like prayer beads, but yeah, just kind of like reincorporating the symbolism that I, and like in a way that's like resonates with me.
Yeah,
That's like cool.
I that's something that's very powerful for me, having a low Protestant church background. And and again, I really like the church I grew up in, but I guess my rage is against the wider Protestant movement, because I feel almost a rage, right? Like, I feel angry that they stole the saints from me, that they stole a lot of the holidays from me, that they stole my mom, right, Mary, from me, right? That all these important figures are just, I mean, you can still find them in the background sometimes, but and in our particular tradition, it's very churchy. It's very churchy Gnosticism, and we combine sort of high church mysticism and practices. We look very Catholic or Anglican or Episcopalian or High Lutheran to people who may know those traditions. So we do a lot with the saints. We do a lot with the smells and the bells, and it's been very powerful for me to embrace that. Even though I think there's sometimes a voice at the back of my mind, because I was raised United Church of Canada, which is similar to United Church of Christ in the U.S. But my grandparents were Presbyterian, right? Very strict Presbyterians. So that they're rolling over in their graves anytime I pray with and to a saint. But there's still a bit of that voice that I have to drown out, because it's been, I think, very, very powerful for me. So let's see. Okay, you know what? We should start wrapping up, because unfortunately we have to cut a little bit short tonight. Jason has to run. He has an important live stream event. So we'll get into the final questions here. Sky, so we asked your advice for those starting off with Gnosticism, looking into Gnosticism. What's your advice for those new to tarot, starting off with tarot?
I really like the book 78 Degrees of Wisdom. It really goes into things as looking at the cards as personal development. So that's a great resource. And then the other way to get started is just to look at the cards for a while, maybe like think what you think it means, and then you can cross-reference it like on Google, see what other people are saying about it, see what other books are saying about it, and kind of like come to your own understanding or definition of it. You don't have to keep other people's definitions. There's plenty of cards that I read totally different from other people. So there's not necessarily rules for tarot. You can get kind of creative, which is why I like it.
Very cool. Jason, any closing questions or thoughts?
No, well, I just think that the point there about like looking at the card, like letting that be step one of understanding tarot, is like, because I think that's what makes it so great, is that it's like good decks are, don't need if they're doing their job correctly, you don't need a concordance or a book or a even a like a an encyclopedia or anything to understand it. You can see, oh, like that person's got a bunch of swords in their back. That's got to suck. Like, or that tower is falling down. That sounds like, that something seems like there's might be, situations are breaking down, kind of thing. Like, it's in a way, it's actually kind of, it's almost like graphic novels, where there's a really emphasizing the power of the image to convey something complicated, I think is really valuable. Yeah, so I think that's the thing. I just wanted to jump on that train there. Yeah, I think that's about it for me.
Okay. Sky Mirinda, we are flashing your plugs up on the screen, but some people listen to this as a podcast. Some people pop onto YouTube and they wash the dishes and they're not looking at our glorious, beautiful faces. So tell people at home where they can find you, where they can hire you, where they can get coaching from you, where they can read your writings online, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, basically everywhere at Sky Marinda. It's like Mary, but with an I. Yeah. And I'm on YouTube and Twitter, so wherever you like to be, I'm probably there.
Fantastic. We'll also link that up in the show notes for those looking. Jason, any plugs before we depart?
Just the usual ones. The theater company that I work for, DJ Memel. Oh my gosh. The theater company I work for, Sage Theater, we're doing a live stream in about 10 minutes here. So you're probably not going to see that because you're not listening to this or watching this on the same day that we're doing this, December 6th. But you can go to sagetheater.com and get a lot of the content that we've been making. We're making it, releasing it digitally now, which is good. In fact, what's happening here in about 10 minutes is a dance film that we made of a bunch of dancers that and movement artists that we brought together in a space back in the when things were okay to do that, for even with where COVID was, everybody was very safe. But it was really exciting to make something that sort of felt live, if that makes sense. Felt like a live event.
For sure. So. Yeah. For sure. Very exciting. Well, everybody check that out at home. My plug is mileandmeditation.substack.com. As I mentioned previously, I do some professional work as a meditation coach, but this is free. This is my free Sunday morning meditation. It's so I can give back a bit. I was doing it in person here in Montreal. Now I'm doing it online. When things reopen fully here, it'll be both in person and online. So it's a great, secular, open to everybody, not specifically Gnostic, mindfulness meditation, 11 a.m. New York time, Montreal time, the Eastern time, whatever you want to call it. So check out all the details there at mileandmeditation.substack.com. Sky Marinda, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
It was a real pleasure. Bye.